And tonight's speaker is Derek L. He's always there doing service work and supporting the newcomer. When I asked him to come tell his story, he just said, "Thank you, I will. I'll be there." And here he is, Derek L.
Well, hello, everyone. My name is Derek,
and I am an alcoholic.
Well, this is just an honor and a privilege. I did kind of mess with my friend Sam on the way down. I told him I was going to get up here and just pass the mic, because that's how you keep it. It's by giving it away. So, I mean, 48 years, he's got quite the experiences to share. And for that, I'm forever grateful. Because when we come in these rooms, you start to see something that you want. Like, he's got something that I want. And I follow him, and I go where he goes. Because I want that, and I'm willing to do what it takes to get that. My name's Derek. I am from the Fourth Dimension Group in Oakwood, Georgia. My sobriety date is January 8, 2024. And I just celebrated a little over 2 years. I come to you today because it's an honor and a privilege to share what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I grew up here. I was born and raised here in Georgia my whole life, around the Alpharetta area, and thought I kind of had life figured out, just to find out that I'd made it all the way to the top. My top took me to my bottom. It took what it took to get me to where I am right now. I just want to tell you that this is a beautiful turnout. I don't know if you've been told today, but God loves you, and I love you.
Aww.
Y'all being here tonight, I think the way it was said, Sam, is I know where we're all going whenever we stay in these rooms, and that's on the right path. Because, man, I did not have it figured out before I got here. So, grew up in a really small place in Alpharetta, Georgia. Sounds ritzy or whatever, but it was far from it. I've heard it said as, like, there's a little small part of that Alpharetta, Georgia that's called the po' folks out of town. Because it wasn't the poor folks. No, it's the po' folks. We couldn't afford the work. We couldn't. And the thing is, you know, I had two amazing parents. They were a prime example of what it was like to be good people. You know, just Southern people. They'd help out the neighbors. They'd do whatever. They'd take the shirt off their back and help out anybody. So they were great examples. But growing up, I always wanted to be different. Felt like there was something inside of me that, like, I was bound for something more. Or I wasn't just going to be that guy that just gives away my shirt and get nothing in return. And so when I was growing up, it's amazing because they didn't really take me to church. They were homebodies. They liked what they liked. But whenever I was growing up, I didn't really know much because they never got out. And I never even knew what it was like to socialize. So, you know, I got my social skills by trial and error. A lot more error than trial. I wore a lot of masks in school. When I was going to school, I was friends with all different types of groups and people, man. I'd just blend in. I almost became a chameleon. I just matched wherever they're at, just so that way I could fit in. And I lost a piece of myself along the way. I really did, and I didn't know who I was. I kept growing up, and little bit by little bit, learning by the hard way. But there was two sides of the street that I grew up on. One side of the street took me to church one day. It was a blessing. It felt like things were starting to come together. And they kept taking me to church. Well, I was only like 6 years old at the time. And it was a Southern Baptist church. They prayed to this God above, but they prayed and looked down. I was more confused than I really had no idea what I was really doing. But they told me, you know, that you need to get saved or else you're going to hell. So I was like, well, hell don't sound too much fun. So, all right, I'll get saved. You know, when I got saved, you know what I didn't realize? You know, that might have saved my soul at that point in time. But the battle for my mind and my heart was on. And I got lost in it because I thought it was just going to do it for me. Because you'll hear a lot in my story that I was looking for that easy pill. And I thought, all right, I did that, checked, we're good. It's going to do it for me now. It saved my soul, but the battle for my mind was on. And that was real. And I got really lost because the other side of the street was my other friends, and they taught me the ways of the world, and that was my first introduction to alcohol. My first introduction to alcohol was at my neighbor's get-together. what I didn't realize at the time, that I was the only one that had a styrofoam cup. Everybody else didn't. Because the thing about a styrofoam cup is, when they pour moonshine into a styrofoam cup, it starts to eat its way through the bottom. Because it's rocket fuel, and it eats it up. This is my initiation, I guess. This was just going to be a joke. But what I didn't realize, though, it's really going to be the beginning of a new way of life. They told me before they poured this drink into my cup, they said, hey, listen, this right here is called liquid gold. Whatever you do, don't let this touch the ground. That was my command. That was my orders. Yes, sir. You got it. I'm going to be part of this party. Sure enough, as soon as they started pouring it in there, they filled up the cup, and it started to eat through the bottom. And I said, oh, what do I do now? So, covered in fear, I lift it up, and I just start drinking as fast as I can. As soon as that alcohol hit my body, it was like a flame, and it just expanded. I think even a little chest hair puffed out. One little chest hair puffed out right then and there. At 13 years old, I was the man. All of a sudden, it was like all those walls of fear of talking to others and trying to talk to ladies, all that, it was like the walls of Jericho just boom, crashed down. I'm like, come on. Like, this is something I've never experienced before. This is something, I can be something I'm not. All that fear, all that holding back, worried about this, worried about that, I wasn't worried about anything. I felt like I was on top of something. It was a solution. It wasn't a problem at the time. It did something for me. Talks about in the doctor's opinion of this big book that I found out about later. It says, we didn't drink because it was tasting good. We drink because of the effect. And that effect, that false effect, but it also didn't tell us, it didn't come with the warning label of like, hey, it's going to do something for you. And I've heard it said in the big book before and in meetings that it'll give us wings to fly, but then it'll take away the sky. Because it's a progressive illness. And man, there are so many signs that I've got a problem, that this is treating me or doing differently with me than everybody else. Because that night, it not only allowed me to be something I wasn't, but I wanted more of it. And at 13 years old, well, didn't know any other ways. So that was my new way of life. And drinking kept taking place. Now, God was looking out for me. I'll tell you, a lot of my story has God in it, which is a power that's greater than me, which I choose to call God. And so, God was looking out. By the grace of God, I was able to drive home at 13 years old, and I was able to make it there, because it was only one block away. Thank God it was my neighbor's house. But that liquid started getting me into a liquid courage. And I started thinking that I was the life of the party, that this is the new me, and I started to find my identity in this. By the grace of God, I was able to get to high school. And by the time I got to high school, my freshman year of high school, I was already doing cocaine. Because I couldn't get there fast enough. And so I found other ways to stop feeling, to stop wanting to be different, and I just started getting there faster. Thank God for the coach that intervened in my life, that was sent by God to get me a part of a sports team and to get me out of my ways. It gave me enough time to get through school and to keep it somewhat together. It wasn't perfect by any means, but it was somewhat together. And there would be, every time that there wasn't a sports game, there would be some kind of party, and I'd find my way there because I wanted to be the life of the party. And I thought I had something to give. Because I didn't realize at that time that I was living life based off of all this selfishness and self-centeredness that it talks about in the big book. It was all about me and what I could get out of it. Because all of a sudden I could talk to women. All of a sudden I could have friends, what I thought were friends. But it's amazing how that works out, because whenever times got really hard, those friends weren't there. It was all surface level. You know, I found more friends in these rooms that are true friends and know what it's like, and we are in it together. Because we have a common goal and purpose that we seek. So, being only 2 years sober, we got drunker logs and we got sober logs. The drunker log is that my story gets bad, right? We all had our story how we got here. But the amazing part is what happened and what changed it to get to where it is today. Because three treatment centers later, I mean, we call it the psych ward, but some reason they softened it up as a treatment center now. I'll share this one story with you. By the grace of God, I made it through high school, and I even got into college. I did not read a single book. It wasn't until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous that I read a book, and I actually read it. And it's amazing. This Alcoholics Anonymous book is absolutely amazing because it's only the first 164 pages. That's the program. And the rest of it, because like you show me this book, I'm like, ain't no way. They're like, you start reading it, it's like, oh no, it's only this part. They done got me. Because that's as far as I ever got in the book. Was the first couple chapters. And you know, those cliff notes, those actually worked, you know. And the way I made it through college, it wasn't actually what I knew. It was actually the person that was just kind of sitting next to me. That's how smart they were. I knew how to use my resources somewhat. Right. Somehow I made it through college, and just like an addict or an alcoholic does, I find my way into a career path that kind of caters to that. Because I made it into a dealership. And that was my first job. And if you don't know, in dealership world, that's where a lot of the addicts go. Because we're seeking that next high. We're seeking that next dopamine rush. You know, whenever you sell a car, you feel accomplished. You feel like you're somebody. You're something. And man, you get that feeling and you just keep chasing that feeling. I took that same feeling. I was chasing in the bottle and the substance. I was also chasing it at work. And I was also chasing it with women. And it was by the grace of God that I stand here today. And the only thing that happened that changed it for me and gave me a chance is that in that second treatment center, when I had no idea how I got there, because of the last 6 to 8 months of my life was what we call a blackout. And I don't remember a single thing. I remember towards the end of it, I remember getting a picture of a pregnancy test. I remember that clearly. I felt like the next 18 years of my life was over. That I just made a really bad decision, and I don't even remember how it was done. Yeah, but it was real. And the one thing about a blackout is, whenever you start having them consistently, because my real doctor couldn't figure out the problem, so I started seeing my street doctor. And we figured out a regimen that would work to keep me going throughout the next day, day after day after day. Because I didn't want to feel. I was in a complete, what I would call a survival mode. I was just living. I wanted to kill myself. But I wasn't willing to do it. And I was trying to drink it away. And I was trying to just be done. But God kept waking me up. I've learned through this program that the harder the struggle, the greater the purpose. Because you got a calling on your life whenever you go through it. And God is good. All the time. So, it got to the point where that pregnancy test woke me up a little bit. It put things in perspective of what am I doing with my life? Where am I going? And what kind of purpose am I serving? Because up to that point, it only affected me. Now, all of a sudden, my decisions are affecting others. And I was told unless I marry her, that child wasn't going to become the child. And so, the abortion was made because I was too selfish and self-centered to commit. And that's when it hit me that my life choices are affecting others. And what I'm doing is really causing a problem. And so I hit my knees in that second treatment center. I didn't know how to pray. Nobody comes into this room on a spiritual high. I can promise you that. But I hit my knees in that recovery center. And I said, God, I can't. But you can. please help. And it was as simple as that. And when you hear things in these rooms about spiritual awakenings and spiritual experiences are when things just happen like that. Spiritual awakenings are when things start to evolve. But as soon as I made that prayer, there were seeds that were being planted into my life to lead me where I am today. I made it through the treatment centers. I got out of it. Still had no idea what I was doing. I went on 6 or 7 months before I found myself into an AA meeting. And in those 6 and 7 months, we call that white knuckling it. I was sober. I had no idea how to live sober. I had emotions and feelings I had no idea what to do with. I felt like I was causing more havoc sober than I was when I was drinking. I didn't know how to live. And in this chaos, and by the grace of God, there was a woman that was sent my way just to catch enough of my attention to send me in the right direction. She had 13 years of AA experience. And she's kind of led me to the right people and watching God do for me what I couldn't do for myself. But he realized it took a woman to get my attention. Because even though I wasn't drinking, I was still emotionally not sober. And that was a real thing, because, you know, there's a physical sobriety and there's emotional sobriety. And that's real. And I've started to learn a little bit about myself by being in these rooms, that when my emotional sobriety starts to kick off, I'm on the wrong track. There's a narrow path that you hear about in this big, big book. The thing is, whenever you're trying to head in the right direction, there might be 1 mile of road heading that way, but there's 2 miles of ditches to fall into. We're extremists. Big book tells me we're extremists. I can be too extreme here, or I can be too extreme on the other side of it. And towards the end of it all, I was in this self-pity in my poor me's. Why can't this work? Why is this working for others? I was comparing everybody. I had no idea how to live life on life's terms. By the grace of God, I walked in those doors one day into an AA meeting. Tail was tucked between my legs. I had no idea what I was walking into. As soon as I walked in those rooms, I was depressed. I was miserable. I had no idea what to do or how to do it. I could barely put together a complete sentence. I really couldn't. I walked in those rooms and there's a gentleman right here in this front row that met me. His name is Sam. Sam Chester. There's your anonymity. That gentleman made me feel welcome. Made me feel a part of it. He showed me where the coffee was. I had never drank coffee until I got here. But I was a chameleon still. So whatever he told me, I was going to do. Because I wanted to be a part of something greater than myself. And I know that I'd messed up so much that this was life or death. He led me straight to that coffee, that's for sure. I never knew how to drink coffee. Or I didn't know how to do it. And he just asked me, "You want a black?" I said, "Yeah, because I didn't know. How else do you take it?" You didn't give me any options. I don't know if it's a requirement or if it's just a common thing, but as soon as you get that coffee in your first meeting and you still got those shakes and you're just kind of nervous, covered up in fear, yeah, I spilled the coffee. Yeah. I had to clean up that mess. There was a miracle that took place that night. And it was an 8 o'clock meeting. I don't know how y'all do it at 8 o'clock. No, I know exactly how y'all do it. Because there's nothing like getting spiritually filled before laying to rest. I love the 8 o'clock meetings. I really do. Because that was the first meeting that I walked into was at 8 o'clock. And that same night, I don't remember much what it said, but that same night, there was a gym. When I picked up my white chip, you know what they told me about that white chip? They said, "You see how it's like, you know, poker chips, because you're gambling with your life." They said, "This poker chip right here, you know how it's smooth on the inside?" They said, "You stay around this program, life will be a little smooth. You start getting away from this program, it gets a little rough, like these edges." I was like, well, enough said. Hey man, I'm a fisherman. That's like, you know, you gotta stay in the minnows. You gotta stay with the minnows, stay with the pack. You start leaving that pack, you're gonna get bit. I was like, alright, I can get down with this. That same night I picked up my white chip, there was a gentleman there that picked up his 1 year. And I was like, man, that's awesome. That guy's got something figured out. You know what he did? He turned around and gave me that 1 year chip. And he said, this was done for me one time, and now I'm going to do it for you. Because it works if you work it, because you're worth it. That was a wake-up call. That was a wake-up call. And I'll tell you, this program really does work. Because I can tell you all the experiences that I've had, the spiritual experiences that I've had sober, are what keep me sober and keep me going. I have sponsors. I have sponsors that have sponsors. I have a sponsor. I have a sponsee. I have many sponsees because I have a hard time saying no. And I'm learning boundaries. You know, my first year of sobriety was learn how not to drink or to mess up. My second year of sobriety has been learn how not to think. And that's been a tough one. Because it's always been about me and what I can get out of it. And now it's about others and what I can get back. Because, I mean, the whole time that I'm in this addiction and this alcohol, I was looking for all these outside things to fill these inside problems. And I didn't realize that I had nothing figured out. I really didn't. This is a tough one. I will tell you, being around sports and everything, I really felt like if you wanted something, you just had to try harder. I came in these rooms, they taught me this idea of surrender. And I was like, what does that even mean? Surrender is a way of weakness, but it's actually a way of strength. Because the thing is, I asked my sponsor, and my sponsor, I was like, what all I got to change? He said, everything. You know, when I came in these rooms, they told me to get a sponsor. I was like, hey, I'm down with that. Because I rode motorcycles. I was like, sponsors, they pay for stuff. I'm going to get at least a meal out of this. But that was my concept of a sponsor because I lacked so much knowledge. And so that first idea of surrender you whatever you think. Because the thing is, do you know how this program works? Do you know what HAL stands for? Because it's an acronym. The H stands for honesty. I got to be honest with myself and be honest with others. The O stands for open-mindedness. I got to be open, and what's that W stand for? Willing. And I got to be willing to do whatever it takes. Because they've got something I want, and I got to be willing to do whatever it takes to get it. It's a simple program, and it's suggestive. And I don't think it would have worked any other way. Because if I'd have came in this room and you told me how to do it and what to do, it wouldn't have worked. But no, they shared their experience. And they tell me, you do with it what you see fit. Let it be your recovery. And whatever you put into it, you might get out of it. But the best way you keep it, it was this new concept. Learn it so you can pass it on. I was like, man, I never learned like that. I never learned to where I could like receive it, but receive it in a way to where I can give it to others. That was a new way of learning. That gave it more validity. That was deep. I was like, shit, I can't teach nothing. I can't even do a whole sentence. But 3 months down the road, I was able to put together a sentence. But I kept showing up to meetings. You know, they told me 90 meetings in 90 days. Well, I was an extremist, so I'm going to do 90 meetings in 9 days. And there were some days that I'd do 2 or 3 meetings in one day, trying to make up for all those other lost days. But those were some of the best days, and I kept getting something out of it. You know, at first I came into the rooms and I was like, no, I'm different. Like, their stories, it's not the same. This is not. But the thing is, even in those stories that were different, there was still something to learn in it. And I had to have that open mind to start receiving and see where I could be similar in it. And that helped me. It helped me get through it. And I kept showing up. The best part about having sponsees and passing on the program what's so freely given, that is truly the only way we keep it. And by sharing with others what it was like and the experiences that took place in those steps has been absolutely amazing. And I've been able to watch God show up in their life and watch the light come on. And man, it's amazing. It really is amazing. If you'll just surrender to what you think you got figured out and open your mind up to this possibility that there might be a different way to live life on life's terms. And apply yourself just a little bit, because God will reveal more. I've been told that whenever you come into a meeting and you hear something, you can't take it all with you at once. You might hear some good stuff. Take what you can and leave the rest on the table and come back and pick up later. Because I've learned that you can tell me whatever you want. You can even show me how to do it. But until I experience it, it doesn't stick with me. They told me, hey, you got to stay present. And I'm like, because my mind was everywhere. When I first came in these meetings, my leg couldn't stay still. I mean, I was just, ooh, what's going on? Because my mind was everywhere. My mind was like a Plinko board. It was ting, 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 ting. I don't know if you ever saw that on Price is Right, but that's what it felt like. My thoughts over here, how I'm going to solve the world's problems, all these things. They told me, you got to stay present. And the gentleman in the front row, he helped me with that. He told me, he said, hey, listen, I want you to put one of these rubber bands around your wrist. Whenever you start to get out there and start going all over the place, I want you to pull it back real hard. And I want you to let it go. Woo! But what it does is it sends a signal up my arm and to my mind to get me off of whatever it is that I'm obsessing about. Because it's really nothing to obsess about. Because God's in full control. And I got to get out of self. Because the big book has taught me a lot of things. Big book here, first 164 pages, the very first part before it even gets into a page is about the doctor's opinion. There's some powerful stuff in there. It talked about these types of alcoholics. It talks about how couldn't tell the truth from the false. There's some amazing material in this book that I can relate to. My sponsor told me, read the doctor's opinion and see if you can relate to anything. And then we'll talk and see if we want to continue on. Man, I read that doctor's opinion, I was like, whoa. Wow, I see myself all over it. Because I was the type that thought I had it all figured out. Everything was normal except for when it came to my drinking and drugging. But that wasn't the case. Because I was literally just chasing my dopamine in different ways. So I come into this program, and with my sponsor, he teaches me this idea of surrender with this first step, how powerless I am. That first step is I'm powerless over alcohol. I'm also powerless over people, places, and things. All I can control is myself. I remember my sponsor telling me one time, whenever you're in trouble and you're in that mind, because there's a lot that happens between these 2 years. I'm high maintenance. I still talk to my sponsor every day. But the thing is, I got to slow down. And that powerlessness, sometimes I got to say the serenity prayer. You know, I start to get disturbed at work or get disturbed, whatever's going on, and try to get in my self-pity, my poor me's, I have to say the serenity prayer. He told me, next time you get like that, say the serenity prayer 10 times and see what happens. And whatever it was that was bothering me, it's gone. And then it's all right. But in the doctor's opinion, he told me, this is an allergy. And that really stuck to me. Because when the alcohol hit my body, it went straight to my feet and it was, let's go. Let's go. And it doesn't end here. And it was a phenomenon of craving of the body and the mind. Because it was an obsession of the mind that whenever I didn't have it, all I could think about is how I was going to get back there. And those things right there in the doctor's opinion stood out to me of like, that's it. Now, I didn't stop there because I can't think that I've got anything figured out. But it made enough sense to keep me sober for that day. And I kept having spiritual experiences that take place after that. That second step, when it talks about the a power greater than myself that can restore me to sanity. Whew, I know I was insane. I kept doing the same thing over and over again, expecting that different result. Because you know what the difference is between a cycle and a season? A cycle happens because I'm not willing to change. So I'm just repeating it. Here I go through that cycle again. In a season, I'm willing to change, but it just takes time. It just takes some time. And I got to let God have it. And the only way I could do that is by the recommendations in this room, by hitting my knees first thing in the morning in prayer. I didn't have a prayer life. I didn't know how to pray. I used to think that you just pray with a list of demands of what God needs to do for me. Boy, was I wrong. Now I've got a list of others that are in need that I pray for them. Because it's not about me. It's about others. And that's what it's all about. My life gets more filled up by helping others, being there for others, and hearing and being present right here. This program, that third step right there. And that's how I do it. I still pray every morning, God, relieve me of the bondage of self, so I may better do thy will. And it's serious. It gives me a chance. It gives me a chance to stay sober that day. It gives me a chance to get out of my own head. There's a lot of things that we say in this program of like, the only way you keep it is by giving it away. Well, sometimes that's real in the real world. Hey, if I want to be loved, or if I, you know, show love, you'll receive love. Show care, you'll receive some care. You appreciate others, you'll be appreciated. Because it's easy for me to get locked up in this Mr. Negative, like poor me. And I start comparing and all those other things. But what I've learned is, the best way to get out is to make it about others and try to add value into other people's lives. So I started adding that into my prayers. God, help me to add value into others. And it's helped. Far from perfect, I can promise you that. But it helps. That third step, though, it talks about turning our will and our lives over to care of God. You know what your will is? It's your thinking. My lives? Our lives are our actions. So I'm turning my thinking and my actions over to God. And one of the things that I learned, a spiritual tool that talks about in the Build book, one of the spiritual tools that I use to help me out with that is the three P's. Pause, pray, and proceed. I'm a very reactive guy. If you come at me and I feel threatened, I'm going to bite. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get out of that situation. But now I've got a chance to do things differently. And pause, pray, and then proceed. And those three P's have helped me stop getting so reactive and maybe just see it for what it is and see what I can learn out of it. Because I got to stay teachable. I got to stay teachable. First three steps are great, but when it gets into the fourth step, that's the first action step. I got to start doing an inventory. Learn that inventory. You know what the most eye-opening was for me? My sponsor made me do a fourth column. Not only like what it was and what was the cause and it affected my, he made me do this fourth column called my part. I was like, I'm the victim. I'm the victim and I don't have a part. But it was, no, I had a part in everything. And that's the greatest thing about a sponsor is not only did he share his experience to help me get through the steps, but he put it in a different perspective of seeing. And man, that was eye-opening. I'm just a country boy, man. I came into all this. I had no idea what a resentment was. I was like, resentment? What's that? I didn't even know what a sponsor was. I already told you that. But I started learning these things. Now, resentment is something I just keep playing over in my mind. Because it's never like what it was originally. You know, it made it play out this way, but I resent it so much that I keep playing it in my mind and it ends up this way. It was nothing like the truth. Because that's how my mind works. And that's my isms that are showing themselves. And then y'all told me, step 6 and 7, 4 and 5 kind of work together, but 6 and 7 work together too. And those are lifelong journeys, y'all told me. I said, oh, them character defects show themselves all the time, and I get it now. And I have to be willing to let go and let God. But you know what? Sometimes I'm not willing to let go. And my sponsor told me, hey, try this prayer. God, let me let you have this. Because I'm not always willing to let it go. And so I've got to be willing. God, let me let you have this. To try to let God in. And it's a different way of living. 8 and 9, though. That was where my spiritual experience got real. Making amends. That unborn son of mine, God had revealed to me that I had to make amends to the woman, and I made amends with God. But what I didn't realize is I had not made amends to my unborn son. And by the grace of God in this program, I was able to write a letter to my unborn son to apologize to him for my selfishness and self-centeredness, and how my selfishness led to his death before it was even given a chance. And when writing that letter, God really showed up. Because it felt like God put my son in my hand. And I was able to ask for forgiveness right there. And in that, I was able to give it back to God. And know that he's in the right hands. Better hands than mine. And man, that was a spiritual experience and a peace that I've never felt before. It was like a weight lifted off of me that I didn't even know was there. This stuff really works if you work it. And I had to work it because it was life or death for me. And there was no going back. Now I will tell you there's times that are better than others. Because a lot of times I just want to take my little up bus to the dealership, take them all to the AA meeting, because they all need it. Because they all messed up. I'm getting better, but they all messed up. But the thing is I've got to be grateful, because I got to have an attitude of gratitude that I've been given a gift, a second chance at life. And it's just an absolute blessing to be able to put together a sentence or to be even asked to share my experiences around this. Because I'll tell you what it's like now. I come across people and I get to see a light come on, and I think to myself, even if all of it, all of that pain, all of that I went through was just for this one moment, it was worth it. It was all worth it. And so come here because of God's grace. And I come here because God loves every one of y'all. It has nothing to do with me. Because the thing is, y'all could do this without me. But I can't do it without y'all. And for that, I'm forever grateful. For being here tonight and for asking me to come out. Thanks for letting me share.
As often as I get reminded to be aware of my emotional sobriety, I can never be reminded enough. So thank you for sharing your experience, strength, and hope.
First I slip, and then I quit. To a hope-filled dream. You rescue me. Look into life's window for a soul that's meant for me. Take me where the promise is. All is. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need on a broad highway. God for sight. We walk eternally. Look into love's window for a heart that beats for me. Take me where the